Fastamai, I'm Lewis Foster, and welcome to this edition of Island Life. Each year, hundreds of young people on the Isle of Man between the ages of 14 and 35 undergo heart screenings. They are organised by Manx charity Craig's Heartstrong Foundation in partnership with Cardiac Risk in the Young UK. Now, the origins of the foundation are well known on the Isle of Man, as it was established following the death of Manx footballer Craig Lunt, who in April 2005, at just 25 years old, died due to an undiagnosed heart defect. Craig had long QT syndrome, a disorder of the electrical system of the heart. Many people with it do not have any symptoms, but it's something that can be detected during ECG, electrocardiogram testing, which is exactly what is carried out at the charity's screening events. When the latest round of screenings came around in September, I was able to get myself booked in for a check. Now, I'm in my late 20s, and I've never had any real cause for concern about the health of my heart. Of course, that didn't stop me being slightly nervous about it. After all, I'd agreed to take my microphone along and record the process. At the entrance to Nobles Hospital, I was greeted by Paul Healy, the chairman of Craig's Heartstrong Foundation.
Yeah, across the weekend, 400 people, hopefully, if everybody turns up. So that's kind of a message to everyone, please turn up for your appointments. We will have about 250 in today, and then tomorrow we run a shorter session so that the team from Cry can get back to the UK on their flights.
It shows how in demand these weekends are. How does it compare to previous weekends you've put on?
To be honest, when they went online in July, they were a little bit slower than the last time. I think one time they went in 8 minutes. So this time it was a few days. But you know, once people see it on Facebook and social media, they're straight on it, and each one is fully booked up and sometimes oversubscribed, just in case some people don't come in.
I suppose we're starting to cover a proportion of the population, aren't we, now between that age group? So there's going to be less and less people that need this service over time.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing around about 800 a year, mm-hmm. but 1,500 people turn 14 every year. So we're not even just capturing that one age group. So, you know, the more demand there is for heart screenings, the more we'll push for an extra weekend. But at the moment, we can only get Cry over twice a year just because of their demand in the UK.
So tell us a bit about Cry. We saw the van outside as well, parked up. It's a UK organisation, isn't it? So what does it take to bring them over?
Yeah, so it's a UK charity. We pay them, you know, a substantial amount of money to bring doctors, technicians, the ECG equipment, the echocardiogram equipment. Even though we have one or two machines here, you know, they bring a lot of machines so that we can run this like a factory of heart screening, really. Yeah.
So, and it's my turn in just over 5 minutes' time. So what can I expect today?
Yeah, just a simple procedure, really. A few stickers on your chest and your ankles and your wrists, and the ECG will take place. If they find anything that they're a little bit concerned about on the ECG, you'll go for an echocardiogram, which is like a baby scan of the heart. And then you'll see the doctor straight after, whether it's good news, bad news, you know, just we're here to support, and the doctors will, you know, if there is something wrong, they'll put you on the right path to fixing it.
And with that, it was time to head to the ward.
Hi, so I'm Joe. I'm one of the physiologists here working at Cry, and I'm doing ECGs today.
So talk us through the process. You just measured my height and weight and everything like this. So what's going to happen next?
So the first protocol is to do an ECG, standard 12-lead ECG with electrodes. We take a measurement of your heart, how fast it's beating, the rhythm, and then we'll pass that on to the doctors. They'll have a look at it, and then they'll triage it then if it needs further assessment.
Let's get underway. What's first?
So basically what we need is all your top things off.
Okay.
T-shirt, we need a bare chest mm-hmm. for the ECG, and then if you have a lie down, and then we'll just talk you through it as we're going along.
Perfect.
It's a very quick process. Yeah, so it's really quick. It doesn't hurt. Some stickers going across your chest, your arms, your legs.
Okay.
And it takes a snapshot, essentially, of your heart's electrical activity. So the how fast it's beating, the way it's beating, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we just need your head up here, if that's all right. There you are, so get yourself nice and comfy on there. So it's important to try and relax. The more relaxed you are, mm-hmm. the clearer the tracing for the ECG. So I'm guessing you haven't had this done before, no?
No.
Okay. So it gives us quite a lot of diagnostic information to work with.
it gives us any clues, essentially, precursors as to whether you're likely to develop arrhythmias or anything like that. Do you ever get any symptoms, any palpitations or fast heart rates? Or
don't think so.
Unduly so?
No.
Okay. So if you rest your arms by your side, sorry, that's it. And try your best, just pretend you're not here. Just sinking for a second, that's great. So just pressing on your chest. It's important we get the electrodes in the right positions, otherwise we can end up giving false positive results. We've got chest leads, standard chest leads, we've got limb leads, and we've got earth and neutral there as well.
So will I be able to feel anything?
You shouldn't feel anything at all, no. So it's not, they're not delivering any impulses or anything like that. They're just measuring your heart's electrical activity. So the way I say to people is think of them as little cameras looking at the activity from all different angles, essentially. Alright, are those doing well? So as we said before, arms, legs, shoulders, just sink into bed, go really nice and floppy there for a minute. That's perfect. Alright, and because you're nice and relaxed, we get the ECG as quick as that. Okay, so I'll pass this on to my colleagues, they'll have a look at it as well. And then if there's any further testing that's needed, we can sort that here if you're alright. But that's the ECG stage done, okay, so I'll get all these off.
Quick as that.
Yeah, it helps you nice and relaxed. If people are anxious, if they're tensing up or anything like that, it can distort the ECG. There we are, okay.
Perfect, thank you.
No problem.
So we know this is available, of course, to 14 to 35-year-olds. Why is that age group so important?
So patients, if you like, younger than 14 years old, the heart's still in very early developmental stages. So if we were to perform an ECG, which we can do, it would potentially show false positive results, what we call juvenile pattern, which is the heart's still developing, essentially, so it's premature to be doing an ECG. And then the upper end of that, 35-year-olds and above, if there was the substrate there for an arrhythmia or something untoward to have developed, it would have manifested by now.
How does it feel knowing that doing what you do, sometimes you can detect these problems that can save people, well, from potentially fatal occurrences later in life?
Well, I mean, that's why we do it. You know, it's a really rewarding aspect of the job, as well as working full-time as a physiologist. I get to do this. I get to come with a great team and see all over the UK and other places, knowing that we are helping people along the way. It's a good feeling.
5 minutes after stepping onto the ward and the test is done, all I have to do now is wait for my results. And just like that, no sooner had I taken a seat in the waiting room was I called through to another quiet room to speak with the doctor, who told me, thankfully, there were no irregularities in my results and I was on my way. Now, I fall into the vast majority who, after their ECG test, are given the all clear. But for a small handful, the results can prove to be vitally important. 11 years ago, when Manx netballer Molly Wallace was just 18, she attended one of these heart screening events, and it would have an immediate and lasting impact on her life.
Yeah, it was 11 years ago. When I went, I just went as somebody who always thought, it will never be me. Like, I'm fine, I'm healthy, play sports, absolutely fine. Went in, had my ECG, and they just said, there's a slight hiccup with it, we just need to double check it. So I went for the ultrasound of my heart, and a hole was found, quite a significant size that we didn't have a clue was there.
So what kind of diagnosis, what's the official name for that hole in the heart?
It's called an atrial septic defect, or an ASD for short. That's what a lot of consultants put it down to. There was no symptoms, no nothing. Literally just went, as I say, because I was active, just to be safe.
What was that moment like when they told you about that hole in the heart?
Terrifying. You just think the worst straight away. My younger sister had a heart murmur when she was born. So it was I'd never had anything, like I said. From birth, it wasn't picked up. So I was 18 years old. Mm. Finding that out, you just freeze. Didn't have a clue. Horrible.
18 years old, and you say very active. Is it netball? Netball, your
sport?
Yeah,
netball. I walk a lot as well. I've done the parish four times. Oh, not finished. Okay. That is a goal, but I've not finished it. So yeah, I play netball twice a week. And at the time, I was playing 3-4 times a week. I played for the island. So it was quite a lot of like strenuous activity as well, with still no signs.
And at that time, you must have thought that it all came crashing down. How was it presented to you? Was it clear from the offset that something could be done?
It was. Sadly, the GP over here was a bit, like, he hadn't heard of it for, like, somebody my age at that time. So he was like, I just have to refer you straight to the hospital and kind of go from there. So I was sent to Nobles, had some more tests done, and then sent over to the UK. And a lot of my tests and my operations were done in Liverpool Heart and Chest.
And how long are we talking? So you were 18 years old. How long was it before you were kind of given the all clear and had that successful surgery?
I've had two surgeries on it. The first one wasn't so successful. So that was 3 months after my screening. It was done very, very quickly. That was in the October. And then my second operation was the following January. So I was under the UK hospital for a year once it was all complete. And then here for another 6 months. So 18 months in total, I was completely sorted and discharged. Mm-hmm. So straight back to everything.
Straight back to sports as well. How much time did you have to spend off?
6 weeks after each operation. So 12 weeks in total. And in all honesty, you wouldn't have had a clue that I'd have had it done. Yeah. There was just no difference.
And this is the interesting thing, isn't it? Because if you hadn't have gone, you wouldn't have known about it. You wouldn't have had that disruption. But thank God you did, because realistically, a hole in the heart like that, you say it was quite large. Mm-hmm. What could have happened if it wasn't picked up?
I was told if I'd fallen pregnant, there was quite a high likelihood I would have had a stroke because of the pressure on my heart. So that would have probably been the first time that we'd have known. Or I could have literally just had a stroke. That's the only other way. But other than that, the only thing we know is if we do have children in the future, I couldn't give birth naturally because it would still put a lot of pressure on the heart. But that's about it.
And 11 years down the line, married now, I understand.
Yep, married.
So life really has continued on as normal. Yeah. And you continue to be active, like you say, parish walk, but involved in netball still as well.
Yeah, I don't coach as much now. I've coached for 10 years, having a little break of coaching, but still very actively playing, play matches. So nothing sports-wise has actually changed at all, which is fantastic.
When you think back to going for that screening test, how grateful are you that you did?
Extremely. Absolutely extremely. It's such a vital, vital thing that the Isle of Man has. And I just wish that we could have them more often. But obviously it costs so much money and they fundraise amazingly. But yeah, I would recommend any person between that age goes.
I've found myself even in the last couple of weeks being very much an advocate for it now. Yeah. Has that been the reality for you for the last 10 years?
Very much so. Anyone that I see, any time that I see them putting up their screenings, like on Facebook, I share the post. I'm like, please, please go. Like, in all honesty, it saved my life because we didn't have a clue.
We, of course, know that Craig's Heartstrong Foundation, rooted in sport. Craig Lunt himself, a very talented Manx footballer as well. So there is that connection to the sporting side of the island, isn't there? So it helps his legacy as well when we hear stories like yours. Do you often think about Craig and his family and what has happened in the last 20 years it's been?
I just find it awful that something tragic had to happen for such an amazing like charity to come from and the amount that they help. When I first like went for my screen, I had a lot to do with Paula, his mum. And obviously I'm still in contact with Paul. Anytime they need me, I can help. Like, it's just, it is amazing for the island completely.
For anyone who's particularly sporty and active out there who's thinking, I don't want to go in case something comes up and it disrupts my pattern of, routine and everything else, what would you say to them?
Yeah. Don't be stupid. Go. Absolutely. You always think it's never going to be you. So when it is, and like I'm kind of living proof that it doesn't halt your life. As soon as they find something and it's treatable, go and get it done.
apart from the acknowledgement and having to be aware of what you've been through and what mm-hmm. you've put your heart through, has it changed your life in any way other than that?
No, I've got a few scars. That's about it.
So I've just watched the game here. Lots of energy in the sports hall at the minute. What is it you love about it, and what's just happening?
A lot of it is like the team. Like, our club here is like a little family. It's brilliant. We all come together. We all get on. All play a game that we all love. And yeah, just it's very enjoyable. Very, very enjoyable.
A different atmosphere to the studio where yeah. we were just talking before. Was there a time in your life, of course, where you thought you wouldn't be able to do this? And do you still think every time you're at these sessions back to that time 11 years ago and how far you've come, I suppose?
It's a strange one to think about because I'm so grateful that I went and they found it. But at the time, I was so breathless just all the time, just walking like up the stairs, and that was my only symptom, and we thought it was exercise-induced asthma. So that's what I was treated for, because we never ever in a million years thought that, and it was only the screening that found out. But now I'm just grateful I'm here. Like, I've been playing netball probably since I was about 13. So to even imagine not being able to do that, it's just crazy. So very happy that I can still carry on.
Evidently such an important yeah. part of your life, and you're in it for the long haul, I can tell as well. What are your hopes for the future of yourself in netball?
Just to continue staying fit and being able to play, like, within my actual team in the club. My sister plays, she's here tonight, so I'm very fortunate I can play with my siblings but also some of my best friends, so just to keep that going, if I'm honest.
And they've got your back, of course, as well.
Yeah, definitely. They wouldn't ever, if I'm honest. My little sister, who I say is here, she has done the heart screenings as well. She was the one that found a murmur when she was younger, so to have her here as well is just fantastic. So yeah, they don't have an option not to support me, really.
It was great to see Molly in her element, and I wondered what hearing stories like hers meant to Craig Lunt's family. Last year, after all, marked 20 years since his death. Hayley Coxon is Craig's younger cousin.
He was sporty, he was cheeky, he was funny, he was well-loved in the family and beyond. And he just had a really fantastic, like, fun, optimistic look on the world. Yeah, he was just great to be around. So to go so young, it was so tragic. But to create a legacy as we have, it's, you know, he's not gone in vain. Of course, we prefer him to be here, but just an incredible legacy that lives on. And I'm so grateful for it to continue to grow and make such an incredible impact on people's lives.
And so for people that don't know Craig's story, what happened in terms of what he was diagnosed with, or what was found, unfortunately, after he passed away?
Well, Craig was never diagnosed with anything. He, you know, we'd always been sporty. So he'd always been a footballer. Football was the number one. Our family were very keen on football. He loved his football. He was so good. You know, he went away. He got trials at a couple of clubs in England. But, you know, he didn't want to leave the island. He wanted to stay here. He loved the Isle of Man. So he was super fit, really committed to his football, really committed to his community of football, and then his love for the island. He was the fittest at the time. He really only had a diagnosis of asthma. So that's, you know, one of the symptoms can be breathlessness that can be linked to what they eventually found in his body after further tests once he'd passed. But there was nothing else really wrong with him. He, at the time, he wasn't drinking. He was super clean with his diet. He was really committed to his training for football. He was committed to just getting next level with all his fitness and his training and his performing on the pitch. So he would normally go around to visit my mum, his auntie, on the Friday evening and kind of relax and chill and have a quiet night so he could stay away from any of the chaos of anyone else going out. He would just go see her, relax, chill, and then he'd go home, have an early night, and he'd then get up in the morning, go to football, feeling great, etc. But sadly, this one Friday night, he went to bed, and the game started on Saturday. Where his dad was as well. His dad was at the football pitch. He was training also. He was coaching, I believe. And Craig would never be late for a game. He certainly would not turn up, not be there. So a couple of calls were made. His dad was sent back to his house. And unfortunately, Craig had gone to sleep that night and he'd not woke up. And it was found to be an undetected heart condition, which they didn't find for quite some time. They had quite a lot of testing to do before they actually found what it was. And they found the actual diagnosis through genetic testing in the end, it was with us, because at that time it was just simply the processing that they had in place and how quickly they could locate what it was, whereas now it's so far forward and is even more advanced now in how they can figure everything out for somebody. So, you know, if he would have had potentially that screening back then, and within that age range, you know, we screen 14 to 35 year olds, if he would have had that screening, would absolutely have saved his life.
Of course, a massive shock for the family, and I know reverberations around the island as well. It led to, of course, the development of Craig's Heartstrong Foundation. What do you remember about those first steps and how it came about?
Well, you know, to be honest, of course, as you can imagine, we were all extremely broken. We had a lot of family over and we were all wanting answers and trying to figure out a way through it, really. And I think it was just wanting to try and get some goodness to come out of what was an extremely horrendous time. You know, we all absolutely adored him and loved him and just couldn't understand any of it, really. And we were simply looking for something to try and create something good out of what was happening. And so Dean and I, we started looking at, which is Craig's younger brother, and we started looking into how we could put this this charity together and figuring out how it could happen, what the, you know, logistics and paperwork, everything, really. And it kept us busy in a positive way, really. It helped us get through that time as well. And, you know, the screenings didn't happen for a while after we started it. We started when we did open the charity, and we found the name, we created the name, and it was like wristbands, I think, at the time. You know, these plastic wristbands that are still going now, aren't they, with many charities?
I do remember,
we started the wristbands to start selling them and start building a little bit of awareness that way. And eventually along came the connection with Cardiac Risk in the Young to then within the year, really, to start thinking about the screenings, which is where the impact, and then, of course, the fantastic defibrillator campaign, which has just been absolutely incredible as well. So, it was trying to survive in that horrific moment, to be honest, and figure out how we could do something positive out of possibly one of the worst things that could ever happen to a family.
And when you think about the hundreds of young people on the Isle of Man who each year go for these screenings, and there, it might just be a handful that have something detected. And like we've been hearing from Molly, you know, active sports people like Craig as well, who thankfully can go through surgery, can come out the other side and live their life as they intended. What's that like? What's that feeling like, knowing that that is Craig's legacy and the work that you've helped create?
It makes me certainly feel very emotional. It's a pretty spectacular thing, really. You know, we wouldn't want anyone to go through what we went through. You know, the ripple effects of losing someone like that continue to happen to this day, really. You know, that pain continues to go on. It never goes, but you just learn to live with it in some kind of way. And to know that that can be prevented from any other family, from other families potentially from going through that, is priceless, and an absolute honor to be a part of, really. So yeah, it's special to see.
In terms of the charity, Hayley, what would you like to see for the future?
Just for people to continue to support it like they are, and also to not be, for those that are in that age range, or you may have children or friends that are in that age range, people that you care about that are in that age range, that might be a bit hesitant of signing up, because, you know, I understand some people don't want to know. When we all went through the genetic testing, that we have family members that did not want to do that genetic testing to find out whether they carried the gene that was linked to what Craig got diagnosed with. We understand that, but if you can find the strength to just sign yourselves up, to encourage your friends, your loved ones to sign themselves up, because it's a really, really simple process. It's really easy. The staff there that we bring over from Cardiac Risk and the Young have been doing this for years. They're all absolutely wonderful. They really take care of you. And there's no reason for you to be worried, because even if anything pops up, we will be there to support you. We can help with funding. We can help with every other support that you need. It can be done, and you don't need to go through, your family don't need to go through anything other than just simple support from the charity. So don't be afraid of the process, because there's so many wonderful people involved in them that can support you every step of the way. I would just really like to express my absolute gratitude to every single committee member that keeps this charity going. You know, we've got so many of the lads on that charity now. They've never even met Craig because they're of an age range that they wouldn't have even got to meet him. But they're there giving their time, giving hours out of their life, so much time out of their life to keep this going, to make sure this charity keeps doing what it does, because it's so necessary. So thank you to every single one on that charity. And of course, Paul Healy, the chairman, and everyone that keeps it going. And of course, it has to be said, anyone out there that's raising funds and raising awareness to support the charity as well, thank you everyone that continues to do that and continues to sign up and take advantage of this free screening.
Well, it was great to hear from Paul Healy, Molly Wallace, and Hayley Coxon during the making of this programme. If you or a loved one fall into the 14 to 35 age bracket and want to sign up for the next round of heart screenings, they're due to take place at Nobles Hospital on the 25th and 26th of April. Bookings will go live on Friday, the 20th of February at 4 o'clock. Details on how to book will be made available via the Craig's Heartstrong Foundation website and the charity's social media. For now, that's all from me. I've been Lewis Foster, Gurumayed. Thank you for listening.